Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and apparently I've been booked for the entire weekend to wait in for Jonathan's internet delivery.
Yeah, and it's going to take the whole weekend. You need to be there throughout. This week, our guest describes him as someone who has a passion for digital transformation. His work over the past 15 years was recognised by A.T. Kearney as delivering the number one most impressive procurement advance of 2020. He was co-founder of Venation and led the transformation of procurement using technology in BT Group. He was behind the transition of BT Procurement to BT Sourced and established the Digital Procurement Garage for BT Group.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, turning tactical buying into strategic procurement.
Today, he heads up transforming Maersk using the latest procurement tech and knows a lot about how to implement digital solutions. Please welcome to The Procurement Show the Global Director and Procurement Platform Tech Lead at Maersk, Adam Brown. Adam, welcome. It's so good that you could join us today.
It's lovely to see you both, Jonathan, Paul. Look at that studio. I have studio envy. It's amazing.
Thank you. I must say, I'm actually admiring your laminate wood background there.
It's very professional, actually, and sound absorbing too, I think. Yeah, you've integrated lights into it, so that's pretty impressive.
When you work from home, yeah, you're spending a lot of time here, so you've got to make it nice. Look, I like good. A bit of a nice office environment. It gets me in the right frame of mind.
Yeah.
Very true.
If only we had that here, eh?
Yes, very true.
So we're going to talk about procurement tech today, and there's so much we want to talk about because Maersk is probably leaders in this field, and you've done so much that leads the way in this. So let's start with what's wrong. So why do so many companies get procurement tech wrong? What is procurement doing wrong here, Adam?
Is procurement doing something wrong? I don't know if procurement as a function is not natively set up to do transformation. It's set up to do procurement. And so probably the first thing to consider is procurement as a function the best people to do the technology delivery to themselves without fundamentally creating some mechanism to do that, either by relying on tech partners out in the wider business or creating a digital garage? I think that will be my first question, is who's actually doing it? Also, are procurement the right people to buy stuff for themselves? So one of the many, many reasons for having a procurement function is to buy things on behalf of others and to be independent. So to do it to yourself, you're the right people to be doing it as well. So those fundamental questions are the ones that I would put right up at the very beginning.
You make a really interesting point there, actually, because thinking about the bigger picture of what you're suggesting, if you've got colleagues in procurement specifying and writing what the new procurement tech should and shouldn't do, then they're probably just working on a way of digitizing their current processes, where actually, perhaps the business should step back and look in with fresh set of eyes and think, oh, now that we're doing this digitally or utilizing all these new technologies, you could actually do it this way.
Well, this is interesting. We could get into a whole super long tangent about how do you source the stuff? How do you decide what you need? Is it the process that you're going after? Is it the outcome that you desire? And I think that's probably the most critical thing is, what's the outcome that you desire? What are you actually wanting to achieve? Not how are you wanting to achieve it? Particularly now that we go to DPW, go to anything, any show, Google it on procurement technology, and there is so much. There's so much investment and there's so much success of these companies. There's people out there who are brilliant at figuring out how to get to the outcome. It should be for us to say, what's the outcome? Leave it to them to figure out, here's different options for getting to that. And then as a user, as a procurement function, just decide which is the best way of doing it for you to get to the outcome that you want.
And you mentioned DPW there, which is really interesting.
That's
because
also
I was at DPW.
The event you went to. And
didn't take you?
Didn't take me.
Yes.
You promised me.
Next year. I'll take
it's
you
always
next year. And what was really interesting at DPW was everybody was saying, hey, this is the latest agentic AI thing. And I didn't believe it for 1 minute because I looked at it and it was exactly what you said, Paul. They'd automated a process, digitized a process in some way. There was one or two where you think, yep, that really is agentic. You know, you are perhaps one of the pioneers here. So I think there's something around what's happening with AI in the world at large, which is really quite exciting and a bit scary. And then there's what's happening in the world of procurement tech, which is still playing catch up. So I guess in terms of AI with a procurement tech lens on, Adam, what is AI really doing in the procurement world? What will it do and should we care?
Taking those in reverse order, yes. I'll get into the details of the other two things you said in a minute. But the first thing that I would say is you went to DPW and all of this agentic AI. You went to a conference about procurement technology 2018, 2019. Yeah. Everybody would have been saying blockchain. Stop thinking about what the technology is. Think about what the outcome is. And then whatever the most elegant piece of technology to derive that outcome, that's what you need. The interesting thing with agentic AI is just another one of these terms, another one of these catchphrases that's banded around. The new thing really was the generative AI, which you could kind of view as the universal Q&A machine. It was this thing that came into people's consciousness in 2022 when ChatGPT springs up, pings into the consciousness, that generative AI, universal Q&A machine, all of this data, ask it anything, get a response. The agentic bit is just the next step, action, that response. And that's hugely, hugely powerful. That's the real game changer in all of this. That very simple thing is what then, in my view, it's going to really enable the revolution. It's going to really enable a massive change that could potentially come over the next 3-5 years. So at DPW, at these events, I see agentic AI a lot. Is it real in the product? Is it not real in the product? Honestly, I'm not particularly interested in that as such. I'm interested in the outcome that the product enables me to have. I will decide whether that's the most elegant way of doing it. But really, having that embedded in one product, which is solving one element in the overall process that I'm interested in, isn't looking to pull your point of, is there something bigger? Is there some other big, hairy problem that exists that this enables us to solve that we've never even been able to consider solving before? And I think the answer is probably yes.
Big hairy problem. Yeah, well, enough about Jonathan. actually, I don't want to put you on the spot, but am I kind of sensing that perhaps you're not entirely convinced at how things sit at the moment, either with where procurement tech is going with regards to its utilization of AI, or dare we say how the utilization of AI within procurement tech is being marketed and what the promises are?
Well, there's always a difference between marketing promises and what you are really able to realize and derive. Do I believe that AI and agentic AI is going to change everything? If anything, I'd say it's underhyped. I think there is more, but I think even though we've got this exponential rate of change and improvement, I still think it's going to take a number of years to really land because we're still at the beginning. It's new, it's experimental. There's a lot of decisions around guardrails and policies and caution that has to be applied. The technology is probably running faster than the understanding of the impact of the technology with those. Embedded in a point solution will do some stuff. It'll get you some of the way, but it's certainly not the big thing, you know, the big change that we're going to see. That comes, in my view, when you are able to utilize the agents to discharge the activity in a complex way that you would ordinarily be doing as an individual. It still takes me a fair amount of time to Google and hunt and interpret. A massive shortcut to that, combined with the ability to then take action on that, is huge.
Jonathan, we've covered technology a lot on this program. And one area where we've perhaps critiqued its rollout is the lack of integration.
Yeah.
Often there's a solution. It just stays within this kind of like, I guess, an island of tech. It doesn't actually become a form of best practice or indeed integration. Do you think that's ever going to change? Obviously, I'm going to throw the question to Adam at the moment, but you have a big interest in tech. Do you think that's going to change, or we still live in that kind of like siloed world?
So I think even if we have the best tech that does the best things, you've still got to implement it. There's still people that have to do something somewhere along the way. And that means you've got to get people to think differently, to kind of embrace it, to feel comfortable with it. And you've got to overcome all that resistance to change stuff, that fear of, whoa, it's a scary thing. Humans are the ones that make tech implementations fail, because if they don't like it, they're going to make it fail anyway. And even if they like it, it's a big change. So actually failing to attend to the basics of change management is one of the biggest reasons why tech fails.
Adam, what's your thoughts?
I completely agree. I would take that a little bit further. I would ask both of you the question of, is there a difference between how you adopt technology, how you accept change management. Is there a difference between that in your personal life versus your professional life?
No, not at all. Interestingly, when we teach this stuff, we ignore a lot of the business stuff because it's all a bit out there.
Boring.
We go right back to, well, I was trying to be polite. Actually, the piece that we teach people is a piece of work by a lady called Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who developed the change curve. Now, this is taught by medical professionals who work with people who have lost a loved one, and it's the grief cycle. So mm-hmm. if you're a counsellor or a medical practitioner, you'll probably be very familiar with the grief cycle. Now, we teach that slightly adapted for the business world, because fundamentally, any big change in your life means you get hit with a shock, you get frustrated, you get angry, you get depressed, and then you figure out how to come to terms and integrate with the new solution. So that natural human cycle, that roller coaster, is something that applies to every single change scenario. And once you understand that, you can not only help yourself through it, but you can help others through it.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
Our fun fact today is around toys.
Mm-hmm.
Paul.
Yes.
What do you think is the best-selling toy of all time, having sold 75 billion of these things? 75, not million.
Yeah.
75 billion of these things have been sold.
I think, does it take batteries?
No.
No, it doesn't.
No, although there are some configurations where batteries can be included.
Oh, right. Okay, that's confused me now, because I had two actual proper guesses.
I don't want to. Where are you going with this?
No, proper guesses. Oh. No, okay. Genuine, this isn't R-rated.
This isn't something battery-powered.
One of them was the Rubik's Cube.
Mm.
And then the other one was the fidget spinner.
Right. Okay, it's definitely not the fidget spinner.
Okay.
The Rubik's Ooh. Cube is the third.
No,
the
third, so I'm not yeah. that far.
No, oh, so the Rubik's Cube has sold over 5 million cubes since 1974, making it the best-selling puzzle toy mm-hmm. in the world. But there are two above it.
Okay.
Number two, Barbie.
Really?
Yeah. You're probably more of a Ken person.
Yes.
Over $1 billion have been sold since its introduction in 1959, making it a pop culture icon. But the number
much
one...
Much like yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. 75 billion Lego bricks
no.
have been sold since 1958.
Is that because they count each brick as a separate
yes.
sale?
Yes. Well, no, but it's the bricks, isn't yeah. it? So when you do it like that, they're individual things. So 75 billion. So Lego is the best-selling toy of all time if you count it brick by brick.
See, there you go. The procurement show is genuinely informative and educational and something to build on.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the home of category management that delivers breakthrough results.
There is an additional dimension that I would suggest you need to apply onto that, which is the time axis.
Yeah.
And so you talk about a grief cycle and things happening to people. There's no way to typically plan for that. Yeah, it's something that you're told and you're instantly into that cycle. When you're deploying the technology and you understand when you want to go live and where your starting point is, you have this curve. But the more that you can left shift that and get in front of it, the better, so that you can go through that cycle ahead of the deployment curve. So you can get in front of it. You can compress elements of it. You can tweak and change elements of it. It's a lot easier to have a pull rather than a push. And particularly what I see in myself, in my own personal adoption of technology, you know, this thing, all of this tech, all of these icons, there's nobody pushing that on me. I'm choosing to do that because I see a capability that I'm really interested in.
Yeah.
I've compressed it. I'm wanting to do it. And I want it, and that's how I live. And so if that's a representation of my personal technology, which, I don't know, 50 apps, whatever it is.
On your phone.
On the phone. None of them are particularly integrated. Do I worry about that? Is it a problem?
Because it makes your life easier. And I think that's one of the things outside of procurement the tech companies have got right. They said, hey, we want to find a way of getting everybody's data. Let's create a social media application, because that's something that they're going to want. And hey, we get the data. So there's always, they've got very good at being able to say, what's the utility that we provide? And so people will want to do it. It's interesting how that translates to procurement, though. So what's the utility at a CPO level, at a CEO, CFO level? You can see the utility at the user in the business. what's the utility for them? And this is where we get questionable, because a lot of the changes we're talking about aren't actually in the interest of the people who are currently doing it today. So we're getting to this point where actually the whole world is going to change, and procurement probably won't exist in the form that it exists within 5 or 10 years. It'll be part of a commercial function with people that know about procurement orchestrating how the tech works, I suspect. Which gets me to something else I wanted to ask you, because we've talked about implementation here. So if I'm a CPO, CFO, CEO, I want to buy tech and I want to implement it. We know that this is a priority. We had Gordon Donovan on this podcast recently, who talked about the article that he wrote in Economist Impact based on the survey of 2,000 C-level individuals that highlighted digital as one of the key priorities in the C-suite right now. So we know that that's important. So if I'm in the C-suite, and I want to buy and I want to implement tech, how do you start to do that? Is it you just go and buy a shiny thing because the market says you need it? Or is there a different way? Where should I start?
Talk to the people, talk to the business, understand what the issues are, what they're actually doing on a day-to-day basis. At the same time, what are the outcomes that you're trying to achieve? You know, is it good old, yeah, is it better? Is it faster? Is it cheaper? Is it efficiency? Is it productivity? Is it effectiveness? What is it that you're actually wanting? What is the actual problem that exists today? What are you missing? Is it intelligence? Is it insight? Is it visibility? Is it the capability to execute a process? Is it the information that enables you to figure out what the process is you're meant to be doing? Is it serving your internal stakeholders, your internal customers? Is it solving audit findings? What is the problem that you're trying to do? Never, ever, ever buy a technology because it's shiny and new. That's literally the worst thing you can possibly do.
Jonathan's wife tells him that all the time.
It doesn't stop me, though.
I've got a feeling the answer to this question, you'll probably echo back earlier what you were saying about roles and responsibilities and who's actually writing the specification behind all these things. But let's just talk about the balance between just buying a thing in order to solve your problem or building it ourselves, because the organizations that are considering a lot of this will be big enough to actually deploy a build team to actually come up with solutions internally. What do you think is the best way to approach it? Or is it perhaps a mix of the two?
You've got to remember, I'm an engineer by trade, and so I'm always going to put it some kind of engineering lens on it.
The best of us are. Keep going.
Yeah. And so what's the decision tree? That's the question, isn't it? And so why should I buy something? Why should I build something? And there's some really obvious stuff you can pick off here. Why would I build it? Firstly, because it doesn't exist. That will be a great one. If something does exist but isn't right, and so it would need a degree of modification, should I buy it or should I build it? Well, then there's the question of how much do I want to invest my money in somebody else's product roadmap versus building and investing in my own product roadmap. The risks to both is the risk of doing it in-house, is I've got to maintain a team and always do it in-house. The risk of doing that with an external third party is then I'm always tied into that external third party. So there is decisioning to happen there. Does it provide a significant competitive advantage, whatever this product, tool, or outcome is? Does that provide a significant competitive advantage that if I was dependent on a third party doing it, and then that third party was snapped up by one of my competitors, I'm suddenly going to lose it? So there's another consideration. Is it common? Is it commoditized to an extent? Are there many things doing the same thing that I could go and choose the one that's right in the context of whatever company I am at the time? So there's many contracting tools, there's many CLM tools, there's many sourcing tools that do many different things in many wonderful ways. All are a right answer. What is the right answer for me? Is it one of those that I can choose from? And should I contract with one and deploy one? And should that disappear? What's the cost to change to another one if I'm forced to do so? So there's all of those considerations, and there's a very clear decision tree that you can map out that's right for you as a company, including, of course, the financial aspect of if you're going to build, then you need to invest, you need to have the people, hire the talent to do the build and so forth. And then you're also then responsible, of course, for integrating between them to whatever degree or level that you decide is appropriate.
And actually, Jonathan, I guess build it, buy it, security, cost of change, cost of implementation are actually questions that procurement asks itself anyway when it buys anything.
Yeah, it's the fundamental procurement starting point. Do you make or do you buy it? And actually, a lot of procurement people forget to ask that question, but that's the starting point. Should we be buying this? Should we be making it? And then which way you go in terms of how you specify it, how you fulfill it, two different routes there. And that could change over time as well. But I'd like to just sort of drill down a little bit more on what you just said in terms of how you go about that, because Maersk is probably a case study of excellence in terms of how you lead on digital. And that's attributable to the work that you've done, Adam, in terms of taking Maersk on that journey. But a lot of other companies will be nowhere near what you've done. So if you were to list the 5 or 10 building blocks based on what are the pieces of tech that are out there today, we know there isn't a single thing. We know there's not such a thing as a magic button. It's lots of different things that you integrate together in some way. So what is the perfect setup? If you had to describe the 5 or 10 key things that you put together, what are those things right now?
Well, even before that, I can't take credit for the success. Maersk as a company, having the vision and the foresight to set up the whole digitization of not just procurement, but of the company. So the whole thing is aligned for how do we work better? How do we digitize? How do we run a company in 2025 and beyond to be as efficient, as effective, as leveraged into digital as appropriate, necessary? So the whole setup, there's a groundswell beneath it that really does enable things from the grassroots, if you like. So that's fantastic place to be and hugely privileged to do so. The second part of the setup as well is it's one thing to say, well, should we build, should we buy? But you need to have somebody who's fundamentally owning whatever it is as a product and bringing that product management, product ownership lens to whatever it is you're doing. Because then you're aligned with the business, aligned with the users. You have that whole aspect as well. Mustn't be forgotten. But that aside, to get into the basics, there's things that I've seen hold true all the time. Procurement needs to know what it's doing, what it's working on. So some kind of pipeline and project management tool, which has got you through your various standard stages of what procurement is doing as a function, the initial idea, the initial plan, all the way through to execution and delivery. And yeah, maybe 5 stages, maybe 6, whatever it is. But that thing that you type into, I'm working on this, here's the list of suppliers, here's the spend, here's the savings, here's the cash, all of that. So that's absolutely critical. Some kind of data and analytics plane so that you understand what's the size and the shape of everything. What's the spend? What's the category? How big? How complex? What's the risk? All of that intelligence across suppliers, across risk, across categories, across ESG, across pricing, all of that pulled together. So very robust data and analytics plane. Contracting. We hear that CLM is dead. Yeah, perhaps, perhaps not. Contracting is critical. You've got contracts, you need to be able to store them, search them, create them, manage them, understand them, derive the full value that procurement have negotiated into a contract, derive the full value out of the contract. We talk about the standard three-way matching, but then there's the fourth pillar in the match of exactly that. Are you getting the value out of the contract? Are you deriving that? So, of course, contracting is going to be in there. ESG risk, always big. How do you do that as well? So with all of these things, then there's a question of, yeah, how do you orchestrate between them? And depending on you, the individual company and complexity, is it a full intake to order orchestration? Or is it down as simple as I've got something on my phone and I put my entry into my pipeline management tool and I just want to click a button that says send it to the sourcing tool? Yeah. So it's what's the right degree and level for the company that you're in and the complexity that you're in.
Great answer. Yeah. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Strategic thinking, category management, negotiation, SRM, sustainable procurement.
Imagine if the skill set your team needs could happen at the flick of a switch. At Positive Purchasing, we have 22 years' experience in building advanced procurement and negotiation capability. With our unique skills assessment and tailored learning and development programs, it's no wonder we're the partner of choice for big companies the world over. Ready to switch on procurement capability that makes an impact in your business? Contact Positive Purchasing today to find out how.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan O'Brien.
Now, I guess the next question is as much about people and culture as it is about technology, actually, come to think about it. I want to ask you about implementation. So the success factors in order to actually get people to use tech and use it well. What are your thoughts there?
Involve them early on. If you think you're involving them early on, you're not. You need to involve them even earlier. I am hugely privileged that beyond just having the product guys, I've got two amazing UX designers who we work with. And those guys get involved at the earliest possible stage with whatever we're ideating to sit down with whoever the users are going to be and mock it up. A hyper accurate clickable dummy model of what we're doing that we can rapidly iterate on to understand exactly what do the users want. You change the dynamic, and so you're then sat there with the users discussing what they want, what their needs are in the context of the outcome that you're trying to deliver and the best way for them to use something to get to that. That's been absolutely wonderful, absolutely brilliant. There is a little downside, is that you create a click dummy model that is so utterly convincing, they then think the product is there already. You go, oh my God, we've got to go out and buy this or build it or integrate it. But to the change management point earlier, that curve of change management and the time axis that's associated with it, basically you're left shifting that whole thing by getting in front of it. And it's a lot easier to do change management when people are pulling, you're not pushing this, they're pulling it. So where is it? I want this thing. I've seen it. It looks brilliant. When can I have it? That's a much, much better place to be in.
It's interesting that you mentioned user experience explicitly, and that includes user interfaces, because every platform within the wider procurement tech environment that I've ever seen an example of is notoriously bad, so they've actually forgot both of those aspects.
Yeah.
So it's really refreshing to hear, and you've most certainly experienced
well,
that.
Well, yeah, and if you look at the established tech that's powered the procurement world for the last 10, 20 years, it's pretty rubbish, if I'm honest. You know, it's not really fit for purpose. A lot of it's still being beta tested, but it's 20 years old. And these are the e-sourcing tools that are used by big companies all over the world. And it just hasn't evolved to the same level that other technology outside the procurement space has evolved. I think that's starting to change now, because a lot of the wider tech allows things to be created in a different way. So an SAP recently have completely rebuilt their platform from scratch by just starting again, building it with an AI mindset to what they're trying to do. So that is changing. But I think it will change. So if we think 5 years into the future, Adam, what do things look like? What does the procurement tech landscape look like? If we were to do this podcast in 5 years' time, what sort of things would we be talking about?
Oh, it's almost like you and I have spoken before at some point. This is the one thing that I find incredibly exciting. I don't know what the timeline is. I genuinely don't. I don't know if it's 5 years. I don't know if it's 10 years. But if you have all of the knowledge, if you look at the rate of which knowledge has been ingested into large language models that you're then enabled to query really, really easily, you've got this democratization of knowledge. So it no longer has to reside within one part of the company, be that finance or sales or marketing or procurement or whoever. It doesn't have to reside in any one of those. And so you've got the knowledge. You have the ability today to work with your AI of choice, to query it, to question it, to have a conversation with it, to aid you through that thought process as well. So if you've got democratization of knowledge, if you've got codified governance framework, if you've got execution tools available that are sanctioned and managed by the business to discharge specific activities, supplier onboarding, risk management, sourcing, contracting, e-signature, whatever it is, if you've got those things in place, you've got the knowledge centralized, you've got the guidelines codified, you're missing two things. One is critical thinking and one is context. Critical thinking is super important. That's the one thing you really, really want, is that ability for critical thinking in all aspects, in all ways. It feeds very nicely into the ability to negotiate well as well. But where does the context sit? We always talk about procurement getting close to the business. Well, is this the ultimate federation of procurement into the business? We spoke about, yeah, your change curves earlier. There's always a curve. I love a curve. There's a curve you can apply to anything. If you look back where procurement started, it started off with people just buying stuff in the business. I don't believe there was ever a company created at scale from the start with a procurement function being defined. It started off with people buying stuff. At some point, it was realized that perhaps we need to get more control over our spend. It's getting out of hand. Perhaps we need to get more governance around how we go about and spend that money. So the procurement function evolved to centralize that expertise, that governance, and that control. Once you've got that centralized, well, what's next? What's the next evolution? And perhaps it is in 5 or 10 years' time that it does federate out to the business because you have this capability to do exactly that. And that's what I find fascinating. And perhaps the procurement organization then becomes centralized, incredibly small, and is there with the expert guidance and expert knowledge, and more like an executive committee that you have of the company, and in very, very small scale, because the actual activity is discharged out by the business itself.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect vision of the future. That's exactly what I'm hearing elsewhere. And that's what all the knowledge in this area seems to be pointing towards, this future strategic cell that exists in the organization that both possesses the critical thinking, but also the ability to be the architects of the future setup that the company needs.
I'm starting to think that the 5 years' time question is a bit unfair now, because 5 years ago, we didn't even have AI.
No. Had we started the podcast then?
No, we wouldn't have. No. Thinking about procurement tech, whether it exists enough as a role within procurement, whether it should actually be a specific role within procurement, like tech agnostic to the function, or could it exist anywhere? How are we integrating these thoughts?
I think it needs to be tightly coupled to the function. I don't know the correct answer for whatever reporting lines there are. The procurement digital garage concept, I think, really works. That is a fantastic way to have that digital expertise aligned and embedded within a procurement function. Works incredibly well. In large companies, there's always a bigger area of support and governance and centralization that's available in the technology division. So it needs to be also tightly linked and coupled into that. You know, all of this is hosted somewhere. You don't sit there as a procurement function in an ivory tower and go and buy your own hosting independent of the rest of the company, or buy a server and stick it under your desk. You just don't do that. With the exponential rate of AI changing, improving, it's incredibly difficult to keep up. Things that I attempted to do in January and failed miserably, I could do last month without batting an eyelid. It's just staggering, that rate of change.
And we saw that a bit at DPW when we went. You weren't there,
you
Paul.
You did. I didn't.
But I told you about it.
You did.
And one of the things that I found interesting is when we went previously, we were demonstrating our products. People were coming to our stand and wanting to have a demonstration of Capella or Ruby or Proclius. And they were just saying, well, that's nice. They didn't have that next question. But when we went last time, the same people were coming and they were saying, okay, so tell me how the AI works. And tell me, is this algorithm based? Does it do this? How does it get the data? So they knew the questions to ask. So the people buying the tech seem to have gone up a notch in terms of being savvy around what are the things I need to ask if I'm going to evaluate a piece of tech. So it occurred to me that with the saturation of the landscape with so much procurement tech out there, what are the things that somebody should need to do if they're evaluating a piece of tech to decide, is this something that we need to think about or is this irrelevant to us?
The evaluation is an interesting one. I touched on it earlier. There is your fairly standard, let's have a nice big Excel. Let's list out all of the requirements that we think we need and adjudicate accordingly. Maybe some are weighted higher than others, maybe a block of some are weighted higher than others. I don't think that's the correct thing to do. I think you'll very rapidly get into a position where you're just checking boxes. And one of the boxes says, is it agentic AI? A year ago, you would have gone to DPW and you would have maybe had 2 or 3 ticks. This year, you would go to DPW and everybody would tick it. Why? Because everybody was saying agentic AI.
Yeah.
Again, it's like the blockchain thing from years ago. The outcome is a critical thing. Adjudicate on the outcome. Don't get hung up on the technology as being part of that adjudication in the first instance. What's the outcome? Does it deliver that in the most appropriate way that you need as a company to deploy it and get the users using it? Second consideration, is it using the most elegant efficient use of technology to get to that. Third consideration is, how is it going to evolve over the duration of that contract in the next 2 to 3 years? Because it's exponentially rapidly increasing. Don't just go, it's agentic AI, I need it, I want it. You don't. Not just within itself. This is the elegant result.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan is from Emily J, who doesn't want to give her full name. Many people don't when it comes to Jonathan, trust me. Right, Emily is in the UK and asks, Dear Jonathan, I have read your book on negotiation.
Thank you, Emily.
And I have applied the red sheet method you mentioned online to my negotiations. It's a thorough process and has helped me to negotiate more effectively for both direct and indirect categories. And I've started to get my team to use the red sheet process to plan their negotiations.
Okay, good.
Some have taken to this, but the problem is I get pushback from others who say it's too much work and not so necessary for someone who is an experienced procurement professional. That's an honest comment. My question is therefore, if someone is an accomplished procurement professional, does it follow they do not need to plan for a negotiation to the same extent as others? Mm. Or should I be mandating the planning of all?
That's a great question. You should absolutely be mandating planning. So red sheet is the step-by-step negotiation planning process. There are different versions of it. There's the big red sheet, traditionally a piece of paper, now digital AI powered in the form of Ruby, which you'd use for multi-million dollar group negotiations, big negotiations, where you'd weeks of planning. Then you've got the light version, you've got the nano version for more everyday negotiations. The point is, it's a step-by-step negotiation planning process. And if you're using it online with Ruby, it has AI powered planning within that. And you could even role play with it as well. So the thing is that if you are going to approach a negotiation, the planning is everything. And I come across this a lot when we do training, come across people that say, hey, you know, I've been negotiating with companies for 20 years. You can't tell me anything new. I don't need a process. I just need to do it. And there are many people who are brilliant negotiators who can get in the room and do a good performance. Here's the thing, because if you have a team of people working for you, then you have a conversation with them that says, are you prepared for your negotiation tomorrow? They'll say yes. That's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's all in their head. If you're a brilliant negotiator, it's in your head.
Human nature. That'd be the answer.
But you've no idea how good that negotiation is going to be. Mm-hmm. You've no idea as a manager whether there's money left on the table or not. So what a planning approach does is it does two things. One, it assures that you're thorough. And increasingly, if we're using AI to help with that planning, to help gather intelligence and help us during the negotiation, we need to have some sort of approach to figure out what bits of information, what bits of intelligence do we need for the negotiation. But more importantly, if you want to have a conversation with somebody, you need something to discuss. You need to be able to discuss the plan. You need to be able to have sight of the work that they've done to be able to establish the position, to understand the power dynamics, to understand what levers you're going to use, what tactics you're going to use. If somebody can't share that with you, then you're just relying on something in their head. It's a classic thing that senior people that have been there, done it, do. They say, yeah, I don't need any help. I'm an experienced negotiator. Actually, if you want to be really good at negotiation, you've got to be able to have a conversation about why you think you're ready to do that negotiation and share the plan so you can discuss with peers, discuss with your manager. So as a manager, absolutely insist that people start using a process and insist that there is a check-in for significant negotiations, you know, anything above sort of $50,000, pounds, euros. Insist that there is a check-in, a peer review prior to the negotiation to just question and check that the planning is up to scratch, because that'll make a big difference and help you ensure that your people are not leaving money on the table. So, yep, don't let them get away with that. Insist that everyone plans and you discuss it first.
I guess also from a personal point of view, that many will be multi-threading. They'll be working on different projects at the same time.
Yep.
And I guess good planning helps keep them on track and alleviates the obvious overhead and stress levels as well.
Because you're sharing the problem as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Emily, for your question. And if you want to ask Jonathan, here's how you get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, unlocking the hidden value with your most important suppliers.
every time you say the word blockchain, I think, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
We were talking about that on this show. It's the latest thing, weren't we?
Exited our minds. It's so fast moving.
But the same is happening with AI. We started talking about AI. Yeah. Then we started talking about agentic AI.
Yeah.
And next we're going to be talking about artificial general intelligence.
Yeah.
Anthropomorphic AI is one that has emerged as well.
So throw in this as a question to you, Jonathan.
Yeah.
How do you keep up with this, and how is the landscape going to change with regards to actually training and the theory behind all
this? It actually comes back to exactly what you said, Adam, in that you need to have people who are doing the critical thinking. And we had Guy Strafford come on here talking about the future of procurement recently, and that procurement as we know it is probably going to be gone because we will automate, the business will do self-serve, the technology will allow the business to have good systems that they procure from. But you still need to think about how does the organization buy well and manage its third-party spend. So you need clever people at the center that are answering that question at a strategic level, and it may be this strategic committee that you described. But you also then need people to think about, and how do we glue the systems together to enable the business to do that? So the training in terms of strategic capability, critical thinking, category management, supplier relationship management, sustainable procurement, really good negotiation, you still need all of that stuff, but you need people that can then apply it in the context of an AI tech-driven world. That's the key thing. So right now, the best investment you can make other than technology is in developing your best talent and bringing in some tech and data scientists within that environment to help do so, I think.
Take this thought of yours a little bit further, apply a little bit of history, apply a bit of timeline and a bit of age to it. There is no human being below the age of 18 who knows a world without the iPhone. Yeah. So realistically, there is nobody below the age of 30 who understands a world without the smartphone in this format. So everybody that I am hiring now is so native with one of these and has people who are in their early 30s. That is making up a significant number of the employed mass within a company. If you look at the age demographic within a company, then it's a significant portion. It's going to change massively. The folk that I'm employing now, we've just taken on a few interns. AI native doesn't even go to say just how embedded and how critical it is. And just the way their minds work is just vastly different. In the way that I would type an email, they will use AI. It is beyond native. That in itself is fascinating, but it comes with its problems. There was a brilliant article written by Alex at SwiftScale. You can Google it. It's called I Prompt, Therefore I Am. And it referenced this exact problem. How did he put it? The atrophy of critical thinking. Fantastic phrase. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love it. And we see that happening because you get so trusting on the AI. We are so embedded to communicate via text in Teams with a human on the other end and trust that what's coming back is, you know, correct. Nobody really in your work life when you're chatting on Teams or whatever is intentionally going to be saying something that's false. However, with the AI, which you're communicating in exactly the same way, might have hallucinations, might have things which aren't strictly accurate, but you don't sit there and say, are you sure?
Yeah.
So there's a problem.
It's a big problem.
Is it a problem? Because I'm looking at this, as you were saying that, I'm thinking, you know what, after this, I'm going to go and put a vinyl record on my turntable. You know, that's where I'm at because I'm of that age. And we're assuming it's a problem. But I remember my maths teacher saying, you've got to study maths because you won't be walking around with a calculator in your pocket when you're grown up.
Obviously we are
now.
Is
it one of those moments where it actually doesn't matter? And to become the prompt generation is okay because somehow that'll work. It's just we're judging it based on our view of the world.
That's a great example. You trust your calculator entirely. Yes, you walk around with it. And why do you trust it entirely? Because it's deterministic.
Yeah.
It's provably deterministic. The generative AI is provably non-deterministic, and there's a problem.
Yeah,
and so it's recognizing that that's a problem is absolutely fine, understanding and believing it, but it's actually not losing the ability to ask the questions, not losing the ability to think, not losing those capabilities is really what we need to be doing and educating and making sure that people maintain and retain the ability to do that or grow the ability if they don't really have it at the moment.
This is a big thing because we're utilizing AI quite a bit in our business with regards to, well, various things, but safeguarding against hallucinations. I'm just really concerned that all these aspects of integration of AI into tech, how they're safeguarding against hallucinations if the AI is at the core of what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big thing, big problem.
It is. And maybe as the way in which we get the context better, the way in which we instruct AI, because it's all about the context and instructing AI that makes it good. The way, if we get better at that stuff, we might actually get to the point where you can instruct the AI to do its own parity checking, that it's clever enough to spot hallucination before it serves one up.
Yeah, that's very good. Know, yeah. You know. Adam, I've got to admit that earlier I was going to set you up because on a few occasions you've held up something and said, I use one of these every day in my life. And for our audience that listens on the audio only version of the podcast, I was going to say that you were handing up a typewriter.
It was just sat next to my fax machine.
See, this is
We only got rid of our fax machine a few months ago.
No,
and I'll tell you why. Because
you ran out of paper.
We ran out of paper.
Yeah.
We had one client in the United States who still issued purchase orders by fax. And the only way that we could receive them from their system was by a fax. So we had to keep it just in case we got one fax.
That is incredible.
Yeah, but you know, it's gone now. We threw it away.
So Adam, Maersk, it's quite interesting actually. Maersk as a brand, just to go a bit left field, because it's known by everybody, whether they're in the industry, outside the industry, Maersk is just a household name, yet the core of the supply chain globally. It's quite a brand to be reckoned with. I mean, it delivers everything everywhere, including...
Delivers. Yes, I know where you're going.
Including the components that we all utilise within food and hospitality.
Food, yes.
And they
and
form
restaurants. And
takeaways.
Takeaways.
And I'm bringing it round to the question of takeaways. You're looking scared, mate.
No idea what we're talking about or where we're going on this.
That's quite a loop.
But he's obviously never got to the end of a book.
That's very telling. When we get to this point with the guest, if they know what you're about to ask, we know they've listened. If they look scared, they've never listened.
Yeah, we do have that data. It's just that the AI hallucinates on it all the time. So what are your three takeaways from this discussion? It's been a really interesting discussion, but what do you think the three things you'd like to highlight are?
I think there's some fundamentals here. I'm probably going to do more than three. I'm going to start off with a real basic one. We all know that AI has been around for ages and ages and ages, but what we're really talking about is generative AI, and the agentic bit is just generating something and then executing on it. That's the agentic AI bit. So think about it in that context. It's not a big black hole of I don't know what. Associated with that, we spoke about hallucinations just now. Yes, there are hallucinations, but then if you have an understanding about how the system works, there's also other interesting things. A couple of months back, went on to several different large language models and said, give me a random number between 0 and 15. And every single one of them, every time, just kept saying 12.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Just the way it's built. Yeah, doesn't do that anymore. So there's obviously been a change and an update. But consider how it's built. They're not calculators. They're really not. So just understand how the machine works and what you're trying to do with it. Use it appropriately. Don't try and use this in a way that it's not intended to do. Large language models are not great at maths. They're really not. Deploying technology, there is one thing that's critical beyond anything else, and that's the change management. Everybody underestimates it. Nobody gets in front of it early enough. Get the users on side. Really, having people demand and want it is so much easier than trying to force it upon them. Change management is utterly critical and always will be. And the last one is we speak about integration across best of breed products. And those best of breed, you may have bought them or you may have built them. Think about the integration. And don't think that you have to deeply integrate absolutely everything to absolutely everything else. I have an app on my iPhone, which I'm holding up in the UK, which allows me to book train tickets. The best bit of integration that that's got with the rest of my corporate stuff is the ability to just press a button, send a receipt to the expenses tool. And that's just a one-way, one-send thing. Absolutely brilliant. Makes my life an awful lot easier. So integrating doesn't have to necessarily be really deep. It just has to be really appropriate.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good ones.
Some great takeaways. We've learned a lot on this. It's been absolutely fantastic to dive into some of this stuff, and it's illuminated my thinking quite a bit. So Adam Brand from Maersk, thank you so much for joining us on The Procurement Show today.
Been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, both.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Report, Captain Bywell.
Sir, we've recovered one.
What? A Proclius?
Yes, sir.
Good work, Bywell. Where did you find it?
That was easy, sir. We looked at the companies with good strategic procurement. They all use Proclius. Look, I've got it here.
Quick, man. Open it up. Aha, it's got toolkits, category management, SRM, sustainable procurement, and look, red sheet negotiation.
Here, sir, an academy with a skills assessment and a virtual learning environment.
Great Scott, this thing has Capella too. It can create category strategies for you.
And Ruby, sir, the AI negotiation co-pilot.
Bywell, you'll get a medal for this.
Proclius, the AI-powered platform for strategic procurement. Search Proclius or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more.